Hey, what's going on, guys? This is the Leafs Combo for Oak Ridge Ford in London, Ontario, oakridgeford.com. If you want to get into your first truck, I can help you with it. An XLT 301A, we've got almost $10,000 off right now. You've got Apple CarPlay, blind spot, lane keeping, 4x4, all kinds of stuff. Finance, lease, cash, big bonuses right now at Norman Oak Ridge Ford on Instagram. I will certainly take care of you. In terms of your hockey needs, well, the Leafs took care of the Nashville Predators last night. A 4-0 win, their first shutout of the season, backstopped by Ilya Samsonov. Nice performance from the defense, as well as Austin Matthews and William Nylander. Michael Piaggiello, good morning, my friend. And hey, you know, how many times have we done a show where we're sour right off the top? In terms of this particular piece of content, we've got to feel pretty encouraged by what we saw last night. Good morning.
Good morning, Norm. Yes. I mean, I know that we have bemoaned many a time that the Leafs play down to their opposition and lose to teams like Chicago, who are among the worst in the league. Now, Nashville is not among the worst in the league, but they're not a juggernaut. I don't think they're a playoff team. But they played well this year, and it was the Leafs were full marks for the victory. I mean, they didn't overly burden Ilya Samsonov, who was coming off an illness, a lengthy illness, and I think more importantly was coming off a crisis of confidence because he has not played well this year. He's played well in drips and drabs, but not consistently at like he did for most of last season. And I think in the wake of what happened to Joseph Woll, and we'll talk about that in a minute. You know, it was important for the Leafs to play well defensively and infuse Samsonov with some confidence, and a shutout does that. Now they're going to need that out of him for the foreseeable future based on what happened to Joseph Woll.
Never mind the opponent, Mike, but if we were to put together a game of wax, last night's contest would be it. An abundance of shots for, limited shots against. Mm-hmm. Only 18 shots on Ilya Samsonov. And you said it, for a guy who's speed wobbling, it's you know, for to not have to have a you know, be under siege with rubber coming at you left, right, and center. This was a nice way to integrate him back into a positive mindset, get him on his winning ways. But again, 37 shots for, 18 against. You can't roll that kind of effort out every single night, but man, oh man, that's the ideal hockey game for a team that fancies itself a contender and wants to become a, you know, a dominant species in this league.
And with, you know, the games coming up, a difficult back-to-back in New York with the Islanders and the Rangers on Monday and Tuesday, you know, they needed the 2 points against Ottawa. They needed the 2 points against Nashville. Yep. Now, if they can split in New York, you know, then you've got something. Then I think, you know, right now they're 14-6-4. So you can't sneeze at that. That's a pretty good record. But the thing right now that's a little concerning, and they, now they've had two regulation wins in a row. They were second last or third last in the league in regulation wins. Now that doesn't mean anything in terms of other than tiebreaker, but it does mean something in the sense that you're not able to finish off your opponents and limit offensive opportunities the other way. So they are making some progress in that pursuit.
Historically, the Leafs have been that way, right? The dramatic effect that is the result of most games, whether it's coming from behind or coughing up a lead and then winning it in overtime, it's exhilarating for fans. It's nail biting. I mean, it's why you pay the money to go to the games, to get your money's worth and have, you know, all of the pomp and circumstance of an NHL kind of game happening right before your eyes. And you want to, again, get your money's worth. But in terms of sustainability and a team that is, you know, working its way into a rhythm, that's just, it's a lot. Morgan Riley quoted as, you know, being frustrated with how things have transpired for the Leafs. Not for lack of trying. So again, last night, a real solid game from top to bottom. And, you know, Mike, even looking at the defensive group for however they contributed to protecting Ilya Samsonov last night, it's kind of a mishmash, a patchwork group of guys who probably never thought they would play together. But Benoit, McCabe, Timmins, Riley, LaHoy and Brody. Solid job last night, and you know, we'll see if they can keep this thing going with this back-to-back or with the New York teams.
Yeah, I mean, right now it's really a patchwork D, and it's not unprecedented to see the team play well with a patchwork defense. We saw it last year in November, I believe, when Matt Murray and Samsonov really played great during that month with guys like Victor Mete and Mac Hollowell and Philip Kral playing on defense, and Brody and Muzzin and Riley hurt, and playing Justin Hall and Giordano 20 plus minutes a night. So, yeah, it's not unprecedented, but the whole point here is, you know, Maxime Lajoie is an AHL player. He's been that for most of his career. But in a pinch, he can play bottom pairing minutes. William Lagesson has been pretty much an AHL player, but in a pinch, he can step up. Simon Benoit played a lot of NHL last year with Anaheim, but Anaheim was a terrible team, and his plus minus, his possession numbers, a number of things were sort of out of whack. He's played pretty well, but when this defense is completely healthy, Simon Benoit is a seventh defenseman. That's his role. Now, they signed him. They brought him in to step in when they needed him, and he's doing that. But I think anybody who looks logically at the Maple Leafs and looks at the state of their defense, even 100% healthy, their defense is average. And you're playing Morgan Riley in December 25, 26 minutes a night, and you're playing TJ Brody a lot. And, you know, Jake McCabe has played probably his best hockey of his brief Leaf career over the last few weeks. And Connor Timmins, and I just put it in quotes, if he can stay healthy, is a good, skilled defenseman. But his problem is he can't stay healthy. Now, if he can, then they've got a player there. So, I mean, it's something, yeah, there you go. It's something that is constructive and gives reason for a little bit of confidence. But I think most people will recognize that this is not a Stanley Cup winning defense. It's a playoff defense. It's just not a Stanley Cup winning defense.
It shows where we are right now in terms of the reality of the team and how we perceive it. Way back when John Tavares was acquired and this group of four dynamic offensive players was supposed to lead the way. Mm-hmm. The dream was that it would be one of the most dominant groups of players in the league for a considerable period of time. The Leafs have certainly had their flashes of dominance, but where we are today, the perception isn't one of a juggernaut in the making. It's one that really hasn't found its footing, notwithstanding all of the great things the group has accomplished outside of playoff success. Here we are looking at a team that maybe may need to punch above its weight to get the job done. Certainly with a group of defensemen last night who were, like I said, a patchwork, a mishmash, doing a pretty reputable job of protecting a goaltender who certainly needs that kind of protection right now, considering where he's at. Look, this could have been a system of one team playing well and another team just not having it. Besides the optics of last night's game and the, you know, the statistical outcome, what did the Leafs do, Mike? What did you see them do last night that, if they can kind of develop a trend with it, they would find themselves on the, you know, winning end of more games like this?
Well, I mean, you have to factor in, and I'm not throwing Nashville under the bus, but Nashville's a one line.
But
it's a factor, Norm. Okay. And I saw Nashville play in Buffalo last week. They're a one line offensive team, and they won against the Sabres 2-1.
Right.
They got two first period goals, and they held on for dear life. And Saros stoned the Sabres blind. Kevin Lankinen was fantastic in the first half of that game until David Kampf scored on that great breakaway pass from that Timmins fed him. Right. And then, you know, I mean, it was a slow build, but, you know, at that point, the Leafs took over, and then Matthews scored his two goals. You know, the Leafs don't think they played rope-a-dope, but I think they were conscious of the fact that they knew that they had a goaltender who was emotionally fragile. And they played a low event game early on. Now they had scoring chances, and right. Lankinen was really good, was really playing, I think, punching above his weight, to use your analogy. But then they broke through, and then the better team showed up. So, I mean, they can play that way against the Nashville, but they can't play that way against a team like the Rangers. Against Ottawa, I mean, Joseph Woll had to be Superman.
Yeah.
You know, he was the only reason that the Leafs won that game was right. Joseph Woll, and to a lesser extent, Martin Jones, because he made 9 saves in the last half of the third period. The Leafs had no business winning that game.
Yeah.
But Woll made 2 unbelievable glove saves on Tarasenko. He made a couple other unbelievable stops. I mean, now Ottawa is a much more talented offensive team. They've got a lot of defensive problems and goaltending problems too. So that was more of a high event game, and the Leafs were able to win that because their goaltending was good.
Yeah, the contrast in the way they were able to get these wins couldn't be more stark by any means necessary, Mike. But again, the Ottawa game more exemplifies the type of game the Leafs have been playing for such a long period of time that it gets old. That momentum, again, it's just a flip of a coin. Whereas what we saw against Nashville would be the game of wax, considering the opponent and the way things transpired last night. You've got to take it and run. But I'd like to see a little bit more of that kind of style going forward. Will that be a bit of a, you know, rhythm change for this group as the games come towards the end of the year and beyond? That remains to be seen. I don't think that's what we're going to get, but man, if we could get more of it, you know, interspersed with, you know, the high flying late second, result kind of stuff, I'll take it, right? Because it's all about growth. Speaking of growth, Mike, and oh, geez, Converse, thanks for being here. Like the content, subscribe to the channel. I want to get to Chris Daniels' comment here. It's nice to see him. Speaking of growth, how does Brad Treliving want to grow this team in terms of adding personnel?
Well, okay, start from the goal out. I don't think that the injury to Woll, and we'll elaborate on that in a minute. I don't think that that's going to make them go out and trade for a goaltender. The reason they brought in Martin Jones for this eventuality,
right.
He's a veteran guy, played in a Stanley Cup final. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not that goalie anymore, but he in a pinch, he can be a backup. It's going to be on Samsonov. They're not going to go out and trade for a goaltender. So, at the end.
And is this a good thing for Ilya? Is this a good thing for him? Because, again, for as much as it's been the Joseph Woll show lately, it's been a lot of fun, and we've all believed that he could be a number one. Mm-hmm. You still need 2 good goaltenders, and if we can get Ilya Samsonov rolling here, that's a great thing. And if he's the guy forced to be in it and not having to, wait, 2 or 3 games to pop back in net, if you're the guy right now to mine the net figuratively and literally, that may be a good thing for him.
Well, it's a good thing in terms of it gives him another opportunity. I think based on the way Woll was playing, he was inching his way towards being, we said at the beginning of the year, it was 50 games for Samsonov and 32 for Woll. It was flip-flop because the way Woll was playing, because of the way Samsonov was playing. Now, this is a second opportunity for Samsonov. And, for the grand scheme of things, for his career, he needs to step up. I don't believe Samsonov is going to be with the Leafs next year. I think because Samsonov is probably going to try to hit it bigger in free agency, and the Leafs have other fish to fry when it comes to signing players. And I think, having Joseph Woll as your starter, making less than $800,000, and then having a backup that can play 25 to 30 games that you could probably get a lot cheaper than Samsonov is probably the way they're going to go. I'll finish off on Woll here, because then we'll talk about the defense. The injury, if there's such a thing as a injury that's actually good news, it was because it was not a torn ligament in his knee. It wasn't a torn groin or a hip flexor. It wasn't anything that required surgery. It was a high ankle sprain. Now, high ankle sprains, as we know, look at Timothy Liljegren. He's been out 5 weeks, and he's not a goalie. So I would say, you know, and I'm not a doctor. I just play one on the Leafs convo. I would say it's a 6-week injury. I would say he's probably back before the All-Star break or just after.
Wow.
So, you know, because he's a goalie. I mean, goalies, you know, you're stretching and everything. And this is, you know, I mean, I could be wrong, but I think that a conservative estimate would be 5 weeks, but I would say 6 weeks. So it's going to be important for Samsonov and Jones to play well. And
Mike, I know you're on the soliloquy here, and that's why we come to the Leafs combo to hear you, because you're so amazing at what you do and you get so much knowledge. But should we not have accounted for a Joseph Woll injury before the season?
I think that's why they signed Martin Jones. But I think
– I mean, but we spiritually just, you know, like too upset about it, because, I mean, if he can come back and, you know, have, you know, bookends of a season with a month and a half injury in between, that's pretty damn good for Joseph Woll.
Yeah, but, I mean, last year he was not – after – recovering from shoulder surgery in the off season, he was healthy all the way through. So, you know, you never know when a player is going to shake off the injury history. I mean, Connor Timmins could be healthy the rest of his career. So you don't know. I mean, you know, Sheldon Keefe said, he missed the post on a sliding side to side. And that was the reason. I mean, I don't know the reason why. All I know is that he was injured and he was playing really well, and the Leafs are going to miss him because he was playing really well and stealing points for them. But I don't think there is a goaltender acquisition in the Leafs' immediate future. So,
okay.
Defense.
The original question was about Brad Treliving and how he may want to augment this group, because if you're doing your job properly, you're always looking for a way to improve a group that could use the reinforcement, could use that, that boost of personnel who can provide what's been missing, Mike.
Yeah, and if he's going to boost anywhere, it's going to be on the blue line.
Right.
And I think it's been clearly established from not just people who in the know like Elliot Friedman or Jeff Merrick or Pierre LeBrun or any of the insiders. The one aspect, and I think everybody signed up for the fact that the Leafs went out and traded for Ryan O'Reilly and traded for Luke Shen and traded for Jake McCabe and all the deals that they made leading up to the deadline last year, and, you know, winning a round and breaking the playoff skid. It cost them a lot of assets, a lot of draft picks, and a few prospects. This team is not in a place where they can go out and trade for rentals. They just don't have as many assets, and they don't have as many draft picks as they did in the coffers before.
Right.
So I don't think it rules out Brad Treliving going out and augmenting and accentuating this team, as you were saying. The problem is that he's probably – and, you know, this is what everybody is saying. He's probably only going to make these deals if it's for people who he knows he can re-sign or that are under – contract for a number of years.
This sounds like a large undertaking if it can happen.
Right. And that's why I don't think it's, I think in the end, because their numbers on the blue line are low, you know, like one injury really puts them in the position of Simon Benoit playing multiple minutes a game, that they might go out before the deadline and add a cheap rental, somebody like an Ilya Lyubushkin or, you know, who they have had before. But Chris Tanev is the name that we've talked about ad nauseum. Well, Chris Tanev is an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year, and you're not going to give up a second or a first round pick unless you know for sure that you can sign Chris Tanev to an extension. And there's no way to know for sure. Now, he knows Chris Tanev because he signed Chris Tanev in Calgary, but Calgary is going to expect, I mean, Calgary's back in the playoff race in the West, and he's a guy that a Stanley Cup contender, a shot blocker, a big defenseman that a lot of teams are going to want. So would the Leafs be willing to pay the price that other contenders will for Tanev? Right. I don't think they will. And I think it would be, I think they're far enough away from being a legitimate Stanley Cup contender that trading assets for him, like a Nyes or a Robertson or Fraser Minton or Easton Cowan, doesn't make any sense. Wait to the summer and sign him for nothing. Sign him for cap space.
All right. So basically what we see right now is what we get.
Yep. I think the improvement that you will see, the upgrade that you will see with the Leafs between now and the end of the season is the development of the young players, is Nice, is Robertson, is Timmins staying healthy, is Liljegren stepping into a top four role.
Right.
I think that, you know, is Wall potentially being a number one goaltender.
Right.
That's what you're going to see. You may augment here or there. You may touch on a few things here or there. I don't think you're seeing a Ryan O'Reilly type of deal. I don't think you're seeing a Tanev deal unless they get him for a reasonable amount and then can sign him. Otherwise, you know, and Timberwolf is saying, go out and sign Corey Perry for $800,000. I don't know if Corey Perry is ever going to play in the league again. I mean, we'll never know.
He's another forward. You know?
Right, exactly. If you're talking about signing Corey Perry and putting him on the fourth line in place of Ryan Reeves, I sign up right now.
Right.
Even though Ryan Reeves hasn't cost you the last few games, he's going to because he's cost you all year.
You know, the thing about Ryan Reeves is I just want to see him fight because he really, with due respect, I'm not an NHL talent like he is. He really doesn't do anything else. I mean,
yeah.
He gives away the puck and doesn't play much, like one hit. Like, what the hell is he out there for other than to stir it up, you know? Chris Daniels, good morning, boys. Sorry for not being here much, but church has been taking up my time. Always listen after. Chris Daniels is an anointed OG, okay? The OGs are the originals to the podcast, the converts are the ones who've come on in the meantime. Chris Daniels, I guess technically a convert, but he's been so integral to the support of the show. He's officially an OG. I don't know if you knew that, Chris, but congratulations on that, Mike. This has been a positive show. And again, I don't want to have any lingering negativity based on how we feel this team is going to end up, but it's the reality of it. And I really don't want to harp on too many guys, but again, just looking at Ryan Reeves last night, I mean, he's got a bit of a big mouth and he's yapping and stuff like that. I don't know, go stir up some shit, man. There's nothing wrong with a team that has a player who is pretty good at his job when he's on the ice for the 5 or 6, 7 minutes a game, but also kind of gets in other teams' heads and is ready to fight it at will. And this guy, you know, again, just, and you've made this point all season long, he's just kind of there, but really you could supplant him with somebody who does a little bit more effective work, right?
Bobby McMahon is a much better player
right.
on the fourth line than Ryan Reeves is. Now, Monday, they're playing the Islanders, and the Islanders like to get physical, and they have Clutterbuck, and they have Matt Martin. That's a team that you need Ryan Reeves.
Okay, well, let's see, but
the thing is, I don't, you know, like he's dropped the gloves, I think, twice this year, and they were twice in the first 3 or 4 games. You know, he fought Jack Guy and he fought one other player. I don't think there's been another fight since then. I might be off by one. You know, he probably, you know, his job right now is to be the sheriff, you know, like, okay, well, break glass in case. Well, okay. I think that, you know, the Islanders, based on the way that they play, are a big boy team that try to play intimidative hockey. So if that's what they're going to do, then that's the game that Ryan Reeves has got to step up. And if Ryan Reeves doesn't step up, then what is the purpose of having him in the lineup?
Right, right. And, you know, I guess this is an appropriate way to put it, but we're punching down with Reeves. Does he really, at the end of the day, make or break this team's aspirations? Not really, but I wouldn't mind a bit of a shit disturber who we can rely on, who's going to protect his teammates and actually contribute a little bit on the ice. You brought up Matthew Nyes, and just watching him last night go to the net pretty hard. He went into the boards, and I'm not really concerned about any injuries for the guy, but 11 points in 24 games. Mm-hmm. Where do you think he's at in terms of his development right now?
I think you probably want more points out of a guy who's playing with Matthews.
Right.
But I think he fulfills a role with Matthews, which is he's a bigger version of Michael Bunting in the sense that he goes into the corners and gets the puck. He's big. He's physical. I think he keeps the flies off of Matthews. And I think scoring will come. You know that the talent is there. He's had a lot of opportunities. He scored those couple goals against Tampa earlier in the season. I think he's going to end up probably around 15, 17 goals and maybe 40 points. And for a rookie, remember, he's 20 years old.
No.
21 years old. I mean, that's respectable. Now, you know, I mean,
Connor Bedard's also a rookie.
Right. Well, yeah, but we're talking about a guy who was drafted at the end of the second round and first overall.
Okay.
And I also, you know,
I'm not equating those two.
No, no, I know you're not. But also, again, you know, and you know, I'm sure lots of Leaf fans will poo-poo the following, what I'm about to say.
Oh fuck.
They go out and they sign Michael Bunting for 2 years. After him playing most of his career in the AHL and playing about 25 games, I think it was, with Arizona. And the guy was a rookie of the year candidate and scored 23 goals and over 60 points twice. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen very often. And that's why he was a fit playing with Matthews and Marner. And that fit is tough to find. And they've been searching for that fit all year. They've tried Bertuzzi. They've tried Yarncroak. Now they've tried Knies. And I think that they've settled on Knies because he brings other aspects. But the fact that Michael Bunting was a good playmaker, a guy who went into the corners, got the puck for the skill players, and got under the skin of the other team, that was a combination. Now, was he worth $3.5 million, wherever he got paid by Carolina? To the Leafs, no, because they, you know, they couldn't afford that, but he was a tough guy to replace.
Mm-hmm. See some chat about Ryan Reeves. Make no mistake, okay? Make no mistake, OGs and converts. If every one of the Maple Leafs fought and beat their opponents up and still beat them on the score sheet, like if they were all Wendell Clarks, I would love it. So count me in for a game that includes big hits and fights and shenanigans. Ryan Reeves takes part in none of that. He's supposed to. Like, I don't see highlight real hits from this guy. I don't see him in people's faces. That's the thing. He was brought in to do that and really doesn't. So if he starts, great. And isn't a liability on the ice, great. But we haven't seen it. So I'm not anti-Ryan Reeves. I'm just confused as to what he's doing here when we were sold a bill of goods that, you know, we haven't been able to collect. So yeah, and count me in as a guy who would love to see fighting, but more fights and more hits and all kinds of stuff, right? That's the expectation in this game. But the guy I thought was going to bring that hasn't. So I'll leave it there. And again, I mean, I don't want to punch down, and I'm not trying to shit on the man individually. I just like to see something. So it could be like, you know, Austin Matthews supposed to score 40, 50, 60 goals. He's got 12. I mean, for the season, like he was brought in to score goals and he hasn't, you know, you're brought in to do something, right? Mike, how do you want to wrap this thing up here? I mean, obviously the New York games, I mean, both teams are good, right? It's going to be a super test here. And, you know, as you know, I'm talking about Ilya Samsonov in a positive light, you know, he had a great game of shutout. He was protected, but oh shit. If Joseph Woll, and I'm not saying he's the savior, but the other guy who's supposed to split the duties and you know, moonlight and platoon with him, if he's nowhere to be found for the better part of, you know, 6 weeks to 2 months, can you know, are we going to be able to enjoy the Ilya Samsonov show for that long?
Well,
right. And is Martin Jones is the offset? Is he going to, like, you know, here we go again. You know, there's always something. Last word to you.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, back to back, they're going to split the duties. I mean, I would think that Samsonov is going to get the bulk of the work. If they're going to have to go to Martin Jones for multiple games, then they're really in trouble, because then Samsonov is not playing, is not basically, you know, taking the bit and running with it. So, I mean, we'll see how that goes. But and really, they need Samsonov to recapture what he did last year. And I mean, he's got a lot to play for right now, because he's a free agent at the end of the year, and either in Toronto or someplace else, he's going to have a payday if he, you know, sort of shakes off these problems. But this has sort of been the book of his career. He's had issues in Washington with inconsistency. Mm-hmm. Last year, he put it all together. And this year, I mean, we'll see. But yeah, if ironically, the Islanders are the hot team right now. Mm-hmm. They're not as good, but they're hot. They've won 7 of their last 10 games, and the Rangers are slumping. So I would think that they're probably going to play Samsonov against the Islanders and then Martin Jones against the Rangers in the second of back to back. And I think best case scenario, they get 3 or 4 points, but I would think one, you know, if they get a split, they'll probably take that.
Jason Sparks, you sit Reeves and Matthews will get ragdolled again, and soft players are going to get pushed around once again. You know what? If he's just having that effect because his presence is there and he doesn't need to do anything, good. That's great. If that's indeed the case, right? And I'm not saying get rid of him for some Simon Gamache kind of player. I'm saying, like, show up. Let's have some fun, man. I'm all for it. Mike, at hockeybuzz.com, what do you got going on right now?
Well, tomorrow I'll probably take a look at the, you know, Treliving and his pursuit of defensemen. And like I said, I think it pretty much is going to be guys that are affordable and guys that they don't have to give up a ton for. I mean, affordable in terms of cap space and the guys they won't have to give up a ton of assets for. And right now, those are few and far between. So, I mean, somebody mentioned Ethan Bear in the chat. Ethan Bear likely, according to Elliot, is signing with the Capitals. So There are not many cheap options out there. It's something that they're going to have to get through these injuries and get into January and February before they really have a chance to maybe acquire somebody.
As Honest Ed once said, the Leafs are for the birds. Cheap, cheap, cheap. I mean, they're going to have to be really, really frugal and really innovative if they're going to bring anybody in to help this group considering its financial plight. Jason Sparks, long season brother, you wait, LOL. Hey Jay, we're on the same page, man. I'm pro Reeves. I just want to see more. And again, Mike, maybe we can talk about it on the next show for about 2 minutes. You know, maybe Ryan Reeves is having that effect, just being there. And even if he's considered by many to be a liability, his presence allows the Leafs to do what they need to do, as if, you know, his reputation precedes him, or he's just some kind of all-time heavyweight. Anyway, OakRidgeFord.com. Boxing Week sales are on. It's car sales, of course. So anytime we can get you in the door, we will do that. All kinds of deals right now, low interest rates on your favorite Ford model lines. I also have a bunch of pre-owned stuff, too. So when you support us and our endeavors with our advertisers and those supporters, you're supporting us indirectly, too, right? Because the more you can check out these websites, shop for your next car, the more it keeps our sponsors on board with us, Mike. Shohei Ohtani, $700 million. A lot of that money deferred to the LA Dodgers. Kind of a disappointing circumstance for a lot of Blue Jays fans who thought he was coming up here. May never have been a reality in the first place, but forget about all that. What do you make of that kind of contract, Mike? $700 million. I mean, will the Dodgers get back enough success and enough residual growth to, you know, at the end of the day, say it was all worthwhile?
I think that contract is utterly stupid. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. Isn't it
a Yankees-esque kind of contract?
No, the Yankees would have never signed him to that contract. No way.
But they signed Giancarlo Stanton to.
No, they traded for Stanton. And they got Miami to pay him like $5 or $6 million. So, I mean, you know, the problem is Stanton has completely broken down and he's not been able to stay healthy other than, I think, 1 year. And that's the thing with Ohtani that, don't get me wrong. He's a unicorn, a guy who can pitch like he does and slug like he does. But he's had Tommy John surgery. He's only going to be one of those two things next year. Right. So eventually he's going to pitch. I mean, I think this was a vanity exercise for the Dodgers. I mean, a lot of their contracts, you know, guys like Kershaw might be coming off the books and they could take somebody away from their crosstown rivals.
Right.
As for the Blue Jays, I know a member of the media who was out at Pearson Airport for the
crazy.
That I mean, this
stupid.
I mean, the, you know, not just John Paul Morosi, but other insiders out there who were reporting what was going on. And apparently it was known. I mean, I've seen reports now coming out after the fact that it was known that he was going to Dodgers as early as Thursday, and all this stuff got out there.
Yeah.
So they should be embarrassed. I mean, at least Morosi came out and apologized.
Yeah.
But honestly, I look at the from the Blue Jays perspective, they finished second for Soto because they were interested.
Right.
But they were focused on Ohtani, and the Yankees were smart to get the Soto deal before Ohtani made his decision because that would have been the fallback for everybody. So they finished second for Soto, and they finished second for Ohtani.
You wonder if internally there was a sense Ohtani wasn't coming to the Blue Jays well in advance of the announcement. But teams are so engaged with social media today. Like, would you not have somebody try to put information onto Twitter to dampen down the hype, or because you see what's happening with the masses and how crazy people got, and you know there's going to be this huge reaction negatively to the news coming coming out that Ohtani was going to indeed sign with the Dodgers. How the Blue Jays could, you know, see the disaster coming and not try to get ahead of it with, you know, maybe either some kind of a press conference, some kind of a communique, somebody out there, people out there, you know, what do they call them, Spocks or talking heads, just to kind of just calm the waters a little bit so that the disappointment wouldn't be as rampant as it was.
I agree, but the funny thing was, and I didn't hear how many people, but I heard that when the Ohtani rumors were getting really to the point that people actually thought he was coming, that the Blue Jays were selling season tickets. That it boosted the season ticket. Now, okay, if I were a person who bought season tickets for the Blue Jays on the thought that Ohtani was going to be a Blue Jay, and now he's not, I would stop payment on my credit card.
Yeah, that's the thing. And what bothered me about the Ohtani fiasco is that they potentially lost out on Juan Soto, and they've just prolonged the inevitable, and that's the need to improve offensively, right? It's the Leafs need defensive help, but they don't have the money to do anything at this stage. Down the line, they will. The Jays do have the money. The options aren't the greatest, but they should forget Ohtani, get busy finding a couple of left-handed bats, because, again, look, at the end of the day, you know, if you fancy yourself a top 10 team in the league and that your time is now, you got to go back to work. And I got to give the friggin' Yankees credit. I'm telling you, Alex Verdugo is going to be a great pickup. I know he's had some issues in the past, but he's a really solid player. You know, having Juan Soto, I don't know if they're going to get this Japanese pitcher too, but, you know, I give the Yankees credit. They're always trying to find a way to get back in the mix, and they're doing it via trade. So, I made the comment based on history, this team just throws money left, right, and center at everybody. It can, but it has changed its methods over the last little while based on the fact that you can't just pay for everything all the time. You've got to be strategic too, and that's a tough position for Brian Cashman to be in. Anything else, Mike?
Nope.
That's it? Okay, let's try to do a show midweek. OGs, like the content, subscribe to the channel. Thank you so much for being here. It means the world to us. For Mr. A, I'm Mr. J. We'll talk to you soon. The Leafs Combo is out.